Hello, and welcome to Connecting.
With Mike and Adrian, we will explore stories and personal experiences that have strengthened our connections.
In hopes that they strengthen yours.
Hello, and welcome to Connecting with Mike and Adrian. We are your hosts, Adrian Olson.
And Mike Olson. And this episode is based off of something we've been talking about for quite a while, we'll get into that. But this last week, I was traveling for work. I was off in a trade show in Wichita, Kansas, and all well. And then Adrian and I are messaging back and forth like we normally do. And during the day, she messaged me and said, "Hey, you've got to check out this podcast episode. So I think you'd really like it." She goes, "It really moved me," she was saying. And so it was, of course, Simon Sinek, one of our favorite podcasters that we listen to. And he's got an episode called "We Cannot Heal Alone." And in this episode, he has Rabbi Sharon Brous on there with him that he interviews. And so this is one that we would encourage you to listen to as well.
Will we put it in the show notes, maybe?
Sure, we can put it on the show notes, absolutely.
Yeah, so they can find it a little easier.
Absolutely.
If you have extra time, we highly recommend you listen to it. We're going to recap the main body of the story that moved us, but really I think there's nothing more than like listening to her explain it.
Yeah,
to really get the big picture.
Yeah, and then him reframing it and in it from a slightly different perspective, I think is so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. But anyway, so "We Cannot Heal Alone," Simon Sinek. So anyway, check that out. But anyway, you were telling me how you were just moved by this thing. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I'll give it a listen. I was still at the show, I think, at that point when I got the message.
Sometimes you have evenings when you don't have to gather with your coworkers and things that you have a little extra time.
Right.
When you're not at home doing other home things, right?
Exactly.
So I thought,
exactly.
Oh, this is it. And really, when I listened to it, though, I thought about all that you're going through right now. And I don't know about the listening audience, but sometimes you just listen to an episode or watch a movie or a TV show and you just think of someone.
It speaks to you?
It spoke to me, but I knew it was really like spot on hitting the bullseye for what you're going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really encourage people when you get that feeling or that sense to share it
right.
with the person you're thinking of. They can choose to watch the TV show or the movie or listen to that podcast
right.
or not. But I encourage you to let them know when you listen to it, you thought of them, because I think it's really powerful.
Yeah. And so I did. So that night then, nothing going on, scrolled through the TV and hoping for some of my favorite shows. and there were new episodes. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buckle down and I'm going to give this thing a listen. And as I did, I must say, I was a bit weepy listening to that episode.
Oh, I cried during it.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it was very moving. So in this first section, I'm going to summarize the story that was told, basically, and it's really about history, and then we'll get into so much more. But what it comes from is the rabbi was talking about way back when, from the third century in the Jewish tradition, back in the Mishnah, which is a legal compendium, and back in the Midot 2:2, you'll find this text which describes an ancient Jewish ritual that occurred during the Second Temple. Okay, so after the Second Temple was rebuilt.
A very, very long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago.
And when we get into the ritual, then I was thinking, all I could think of is, why did people stop doing this?
Right.
And why don't we do this today? Because we live in a different type of community. Tell the ritual.
Yeah, okay. So how this works. Okay, so imagine then, long time ago, right, third century, and the Jews are making their pilgrimage back to Jerusalem. And they do this several times a year, when you can make it work. But this pilgrimage happens several times a year. Hundreds of thousands of Jews would ascend to Jerusalem. That was part of it, right?
Yeah.
And then they would climb the steps of the temple to the huge plaza. And then you've got a decision to make. You're either going to turn left or you're going to turn right as you go up these stairs into the plaza. And this is really, really critical. Those who turn to the right then surround it and do a counterclockwise turn, right? As they go in and they're forming this line going around. And then those who go left go the other direction, okay? But there's a significance based on which direction you go, okay? So here's what it is. Those who are mourning, brokenhearted, sick, hurting, or whatever, something is
not
bringing
right.
you down. Yeah, things are not quite right, and you're carrying some burden, you would turn to the left, and you're going against the flow because most of the people are going to the right. Vast majority are going to the right.
Right. So if you imagine the masses, the community gathering,
mm-hmm.
going up the stairs, and then sort of like water, most people would just, the line, the queue,
right.
would turn right and do this walk around the perimeter of the temple.
Yep.
Toward the right.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. As they would circle counterclockwise. Yep. They would go to the right. Yep. And then the people going to the left, they're circling clockwise to meet each other, essentially.
Yes.
And pass each other.
Yes.
Yeah. And those on the right, then, it is their responsibility, their job to say things like to these people who are coming
at
them from the left, you know, what has happened? Tell me your story. I mean, they're looking them in the eye. They're having these conversations saying, why does your heart hurt? Tell me.
Yeah. Why are you brokenhearted today?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, wow. Yeah. To have that openness, mm-hmm. to have that vulnerability
right.
is huge because both sides are vulnerable because it's very hard to ask the question and it's hard to be asked.
Yeah, it's risky for both folks.
Right. It is.
On different levels, but definitely, I like that you said vulnerable and really exposed, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You're exposing your inner being, your thoughts, your emotions, both directions.
You are, definitely. And those on the left then would respond with what they are carrying. You know, what is it that is breaking your heart? You would then share that, you know, with complete strangers or those
possibly,
that you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Because we're talking right. lots of people there, so right. you're obviously not going to know everybody. And they came from all over the land for this.
Different villages and cities
right.
and things.
So, mm-hmm. so in that, you know, there's maybe some safety in the anonymity, but still, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, still hard to open up and to say that this is what I'm carrying.
But this was the ritual. This was the tradition.
Right.
So they're used to making the choice
mm-hmm.
and to having that public affirmation both ways. Not that it isn't hard.
Right.
But they're like, this is what we in community do because we don't let anyone suffer alone. That's what, you know,
right.
the healing part of it that rabbi was speaking of was we can't heal in solitude.
Yeah.
Like by ourselves. We need other people.
We need to be together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so those who went left, they were listened to, they were heard, they were not alone in their pain, right? Like you said, that I think that's really important. Those on the right then would listen, they'd ask the questions, and they'd offer a blessing.
I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah.
We don't normally bless one another.
Right.
I don't think.
Not in that kind of sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was just like, wow. You know, but today as we look at society, how quickly, you know, if we see someone pain, hurry along, don't look, right? I mean, that just
don't
tends,
ask.
Mm-hmm. That tends to be the way of how, you know, a lot of humanity acts.
We are very, in our culture today, very dismissive and, well, really kind of, we want to deny
yeah.
that anyone is in pain. We want things immediately, and we want to believe that everything is just rainbows and butterflies and unicorns, and that just isn't daily life.
Right. I have to show an attitude of that I'm quote-unquote strong, right, whatever that
mm-hmm.
is, that, yep, keep going, you know, push on. Yeah, where, you know, we had mentioned this before, I think, you know, the days of mourning where people wear a black armband, right? And so it would be quite visible.
Immediate thing I thought of. with this ritual, because as she described it, I could picture the people doing it. Like, mm-hmm. I always draw a picture in my head. I know other people right. do other things, but I could see them get to the doorway.
Yeah.
And be like, I've been thinking about what I'm going to do. What am I really going to do now that the moment is there to decide
which way am I
right
going?
Or left?
Yeah.
And then people going through the ritual and tradition of greeting one another as the flows, you know, meet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you continue to walk the rest of that direction. I was like, wow, that's just such a great visual image. And what can we learn or glean from that practice?
Yeah. There's so much there. You know, I think we as people who have stuff, we need to do both. We need to go left and we need to go right.
Yes.
And because we're all carrying something, but sometimes, you know, it's, or hopefully most of the time, it's not so much that we, you know, feel the need that we have to go left, but we're, even though we go right, we're still carrying something, but perhaps the burden is not so great, or we're not ready to share. We're still
right. I think timing is everything.
Processing part of it. But
knowing you have the option to share with your community, or that you aren't alone when you are ready to
right.
share your brokenheartedness, is a really powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. To have that choice, right?
Uh-huh.
So I think when we turn right, as I was thinking through this, just some thoughts as to perceptions and things and actions. When we turn to the right to be there for those on the left, to just be there. I mean, I think that is one of the hardest things, is that when you know someone is grieving, or you know someone has pain or hurt or heartache, we don't know what to say. We don't know what to do. And so often we do nothing and we avoid it because we don't want to do the wrong thing. But that leaves that person in isolation, and that is the wrong thing.
But by doing nothing, we are doing something.
Exactly.
And it's sending the wrong message, I think.
Right. And
in this practice, you are asked then to just say, tell me what happened to you.
Yeah.
Why do you feel this way today? Can you share? And you're not trying to fix them.
I think that's key, right? Because we are so often trying to fix.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know I do that in my life, is that, you know, I mean, that's like my job. I fix things, fix problems.
And also, if we can fix it, then that person won't be brokenhearted anymore and we won't have to see it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's about us.
It's both.
Yeah. I believe most people genuinely want to help another, but mm-hmm. a lot of times too, though, it is, so then I don't have to face your suffering.
Right. And I think it's okay to say, I have no idea what to say, but I love you and I want you to know that I see you.
Yes. So powerful.
And whatever it is, you tell me. You want me just to sit here and you want to talk, or are we just going to sit and let, you know, the waves go by on the lake? Whatever it is, you let me know, because I want to be here with you, for you, in whatever that means. Right. And so I think if we can step back and do that, I think it's so helpful. And then to listen, even though it's uncomfortable, it's hard to hear the stories sometimes of the pain that people go through, but it helps them to express that, I think, right? And to not be alone. Because when you're feeling that, if you have the opportunity to express what's going on, the loneliness gives way a bit, right?
Absolutely. And we cannot change things that happen to ourselves or other people throughout our life that are hard.
Mm-hmm.
We can't change them. We have to move through them. But moving through them with a support system is going to lighten it in some way. It is going to offer hope that there might be a better day ahead. Not right now,
right.
But you know, that they might make it through, because you really don't know how down
right.
and how sad that person might be. So even just your presence is going to offer hope.
Yeah. Yep. Hope is very important. And one thing that Simon said was that I really liked was, you need to get in the mud with them.
Yeah. He used that image because he said, you know, when you come across a friend or a coworker and they're having, in more like today's
right.
modern world or whatever, he says, I like to picture that they are sitting in mud.
Yep.
And what I am asked to do is not clean up the mud, not try to pull them out of the mud.
Right.
What I'm called to do is to just plop myself down and sit in the mud with them. And that goes perfectly parallels what I picture this mm-hmm. tradition being also. So just yet another metaphor for how we can be there with someone in their pain.
Yeah. So sit in the mud. Yeah, I like that too. I was just like, wow, the imagery is so, so strong.
Yeah.
And I think to say and to help them to know that I will not abandon you,
yeah.
right? No matter how alone you feel in your grief or your brokenheartedness, I am here. Even when I'm not here, you are on my heart. And when you want me here or you need me, reach out. And by the way, I'm going to keep reaching out to you just to check. How you doing? You know?
And I think it's so important for us to practice this so that others' pain is not too much for us.
Right.
Right? I mean, we it's like any other skill, any other muscle. We need to practice it to feel uncomfortable a little bit so that when someone shares something that we're really unfamiliar with or we're scared of, we don't run away, that we can hold their pain
yeah.
with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a hard thing.
Oh, so hard.
Yeah. And just keep saying, you are not alone in this.
Yep.
You are not alone.
Right. I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. When we turn left, that's hard, right? That's that vulnerability for sure, right? Because now you're looking to bare your soul and to say, you know, perhaps in little pieces at first and then more as you feel more comfortable. But it is good because we're seeking out others so we are not alone. You know, I think the rabbi made this point that typically, or maybe it was Simon, that typically when we are feeling these feelings of despair, brokenheartedness, grief, that often we draw within ourselves and we try to handle it on our own because we feel that's how it needs to be done. But
and also to self-protect,
yeah,
right?
Right, exactly.
Because at times, if we speak it, it's real.
It's real. True.
It's real.
Yeah.
And we can sort of insulate ourselves a tiny bit by not sharing, right? And pretend the story we tell ourselves, pretend that our pain is really not happening or that thing is not really actually our life.
Right, right.
And so speaking it out loud, I just think how brave it must be to stand in that doorway and consciously turn left and say, I'm going to let everybody see this now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be hard. And, you know, I like the title of that episode, We Cannot Heal Alone, you know, and that's they were both talking about is that when we work through this together, even though it's my pain, but you're there with me, you're going to help me carry it some.
That's right. Yep.
And so that's a big thing. That's a big thing to open up to and to be able to do that, right? It does not need to be fixed. There's things, a lot of this is not fixable, right? So there's nothing to fix, but it does help our hearts to mend a little, I think, when we share what we are going through.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I am carrying. Hear my story. Walk with me. And then my heart can mend.
Right.
Yeah. It helps us to not feel that isolated. And I think if we're feeling drawn to the left.
Yeah.
And we don't have this place to go to. We can't go to the temple now and do this ritual as it was, you know, in the third century. Think of those who are around you who will treat you tenderly
right.
with your story,
right.
who will be there with empathy and compassion and are there, right? And find those people to do so. And it's just a beautiful ritual. as I listen to them describe this ritual and talk about it back and forth, you know, the images like you talked about were so beautiful in my mind. And I was thinking, wow, if society could do this,
yeah.
You know, even not at large, but even in small, in our small communities, right? If we could do this, imagine if this happened at work. I mean,
a lot more trust, a lot more safety, a lot of things would really need to be in place in your workplace to accomplish this.
Yeah.
But wow, it would be powerful.
It would be so transformational mm-hmm. in the workplace if people had that type of relationship with each other,
yeah.
right? Trust levels, everything. I mean, you have to have some of that in place to make it work. But yet, wow, my mind is just going, this would be fantastic.
What would that look like? And how could that be so transformative?
Yeah, yeah. So mm-hmm. I think we need to step out of our comfort and comfort those in need.
Yeah.
To face our fear so that we can help those who are facing grief, pain, sorrow, brokenheartedness, whatever it is they've got. So as I imagine in the third century, mm-hmm. placing myself there with my robes and my sandals or whatever it is the appropriate attire is, as we think of movie images, I don't know, walking through the desert, ascending the stairs of the temple to the plaza. Today, I'd be turning left.
Yeah. I think that because this was so moving for us, we thought we would be vulnerable and maybe show you what it could look like today, right? And so you're choosing to turn left in front of an audible audience, right?
Right.
Where people cannot physically greet you, but we feel the love and support that you're going to offer Mike as he shares.
Thank you. So why I'm turning left is my heart is breaking.
Yeah.
My parents are aging, like all parents are aging.
Yep.
We knew these days were coming. These are not a surprise. But you never know what they look like, right? It's different for everybody. And you don't know the rate. You don't know how it will happen. You don't know. We just don't know, right?
And you don't know the day or the hour that you should prepare yourself
right.
for any amount of news.
Yeah.
Of their changing status. And we're just in that season of life. We're at the age range where our parents are elderly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And my parents are 85.
Both of them.
Both of them. And so that's pretty old. That's pretty phenomenal.
That's amazing.
When I look at the statistics, that's pretty good. And, you know, I hope to make it that long myself, if not longer, but we'll see what's in the cards. But, you know, you don't know what it's going to be like. And we have friends, many friends who are going through similar things with their parents. Some of them no longer have them.
We've already lost my dad, so we've been through one season.
Yep. So there's just all this change now as, you know, the winter of their lives come in, right?
Yeah.
And so the recent story, the recent brokenheartedness in me is that before this last week when I was traveling, the 2 weeks before that were pretty much insanity. I was in the ER, my sister and I, four times over that 2 weeks, two times with each of the parents, so my father and my mother. And for different things.
Right.
But age-related as well. And it started with my mom having sickness. She's not been quite well for well over a month now. And she just wasn't doing well. And so I took her to the ER. And we went there and we were there all day running tests, running tests, running tests. And, you know, they couldn't really find anything conclusive. And so you know, back we go to assisted living and we're, you know, left with more questions than answers going,
right.
What is going on? You know, she's just not eating well. And so that, of course, causes all types of trouble. She's no longer very active, not moving. And so
not eating well.
Yeah.
Stomach hurts, back hurts, you know.
So huge, huge struggle. And we're like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? And then a few days later, my dad calls 9:20 p.m.
on a weeknight.
Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mike, I'm seeing double vision. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm looking at the TV and there's two TVs. And he wasn't very coherent. And it was hard to get a good read as to what was really going on. I said, did you eat dinner? Because sometimes he doesn't eat well. And I'm thinking to myself, is this a stroke? Is this what is this? Is it dietary? I don't know, right? So as we try to diagnose over the phone. And I'm like, well, I'm on my way over with every intention in my mind that he's going to the ER. You and I both go together.
Right.
And we're like, yeah, we're going.
I mean, with anyone, right, I think the safest bet is to take them in. And
exactly.
If someone sends you home saying you're perfectly fine, all the better, because the alternative isn't great.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And he even called us on the way over and said, no, it's clearing up.
I'm decided. I'll wait till morning. We're like,
nope. We're going in. So continue to get ready. Make sure you're dressed. We are going in. So we get there and it's double vision's back again. And so then I'm starting to stress a little bit going, okay, the clock is ticking. He told me at what time he started seeing symptoms, which was an hour before that. But was that accurate? Was it not? Right. You know, so that's got a concern for me. And I'm like, on the way over, I was debating whether I should have called 911 or not. In hindsight, perhaps yes. But yet, also in hindsight, it was okay. So we'll explain that. But anyway, so we get there, and then he's doing all the dad things. My dad, you know, he's got all these things he likes to check box off. Got to do this, got to do this before you get out of the house.
I think most elderly people, even some younger people, have
a process of
lights they turn on or off when they're going to leave the house. And he was going through all these things, and we're like, no, it's okay. We're just going to leave, and whatever light's on is okay. But he was not having it.
He wasn't. And I said, finally, I told him, I said, Dad, either you get to the vehicle now or I'm calling 911. I pulled out my phone right now. And then he moved. So anyway.
But it's hard don't listen to you and you're trying to help. This is all part
and
of
he's in a
the suffering
state,
and
it's
brokenheartedness because you don't know what, from moment to moment, you don't know what to say to them that will be helpful or that will be a deterrent.
Right?
You don't. I mean, it's so many moving pieces that it really is so, so hard on your heart.
It is a lot. So then the four of us then head over. So his stepwife, of course, we ring with. And
your stepmom.
My stepmom. I'm sorry.
His wife.
His wife, stepmom. And we head over to the ER. And they, you know, the good news is that it was late because the ER was almost empty. Not that they wouldn't have got to him right away anyway.
They would have.
Because, you know, he was code stroke. And they could see that. And, you know, they immediately triaged him like, oh, okay, let's get him back to the CT scan and, you know, all that kind of stuff and make sure he's not hemorrhaging. So like, okay, good, no hemorrhage. We'll wait just a couple of minutes and then we're going to get you to a room. And then they started assessing and they're doing all types of visual tests and memory tests and all the stuff to figure out what's going on. And they're like, yeah, this looks like a stroke. And, you know, but, you know, they just want to be sure. And so they're double checking. They're like, okay, yep, we're going to get a clot buster going and go. And so then they inject him with a clot buster.
Yeah, we got him there in the magic
in the window.
Three windows.
Yeah,
three
hours is what you've got essentially. And they said, yeah, you did the right thing. You got him here in time.
Mm-hmm.
And miraculously, he came out with basically no visible effects from this. I mean, he's a little bit on the lip, on his mouth, but other than that, they were like, yeah, this is amazing. And we could see too how the clot buster was working because then his visual thing changed and his responses changed within 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, they're miracle workers at the hospital.
Yeah, it was just amazing. Yeah. So then just a quick PSA, yeah, don't wait, don't sleep till the next morning and go, yeah, I'll take care of it tomorrow. It was just like with my heart attack. Go in when you feel the symptoms.
Go in, take your loved one in. If they send you home,
great.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yes, that's what you want, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. So, but then you're in the right place.
They're like, yeah, you guys did the right thing, because he easily could have sloughed it off. And many times he does slough off his health stuff and says, oh, I'm fine. A lot of people say that. You know, I think most of us do at some level.
Well, and then this is the worry too now with aging parents. You're like, well, if he has anything next time, will he call you? Will he not? I mean, it's all these things we wonder about, right?
Yeah.
About how to care for them and what assistance do they need or not need. It changes on the daily. So it's really something you are thinking of almost 24/7.
Yeah, you're constantly navigating and renavigating and
renavigating. Yeah.
Because it changes.
What is needed. And,
it changes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then he stayed in the hospital and they were like, basically, it's an averted stroke, but they called it a different name because he did have some symptoms afterwards. But caught it in time that
for the major damage that
it was averted. So that was a miracle right there. So that was great. But you know, of course, there is recovery with that, and lots of things to watch. And so he's there for a few days, and of course, meanwhile, mom is still not great. We're trying to figure that out and see what's going on, and we're messaging the nurse practitioner, you know, and that whole thing. And so it's dancing between the two parents, you know, my sister and I, trying to care for both and figure out what's going on, make those navigational choices as to what should be happening.
It was, I know, the picture of like house on fire.
Yeah.
You know, like which medical professional is going to be calling you next?
Right.
What major decision are you going to need to make next,
yep,
on behalf of someone, or where, since your parents are divorced, where do you go? Because they were both having issues at the same time live in different cities. And it's like, do I go here and my sister goes there? Do we both go to one and then the other together?
Right.
I mean, it's so much to process at one time. It's You were in overwhelm, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And being supported by my family was great. You were like, yeah, whatever you need. And you knew when I needed you to be there extra, and you stepped in. So we're continuing on for a couple more days. And then I knew that Monday, then the nurse practitioner was going to see our mother and check on her, and because we had been messaging across the portal.
Because she was just a day visit in the ER and then went back to her
sister. She went back to her, right, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, and so still trying to figure out what's going on there. And so she was, I will see her on that Monday, and then we'll go from there. So I'm like, okay, great. So then meanwhile, on that Monday, Dad calls again and says, hey, my vision's blurry. And I'm like, okay, double vision? Nope, no double vision, but it's blurry, and I feel lightheaded.
Yeah, he was dizzy. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
And I'm like, okay, on my way over.
Because they had said on discharge,
right,
if he has more symptoms, bring him back in. So then you're going to bring him back in.
Because it could repeat, right? I mean, he's on blood thinner and all of
and once an elderly person or anyone really has a stroke, they do have...
They've got an increased risk for a while.
For another sure. one.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And so we're like, okay. I said, I'm on my way over. We know the time window. You just started having these symptoms. Let's get you in. So I said, thank you for calling. You did the right thing, right? Constantly affirming that you did the right thing. Always call, right? So we get in to the ER, and it is a zoo because it is mid-afternoon. And it was like watching an ER TV show. It was crazy.
There were so many people.
So many people.
Everywhere. And we have to say, the hospital staff was doing amazing things.
They were.
They would come up out and check vitals. They would take people for blood work and then park them back in the waiting area. But they were like triaging everybody and seeing who needed to be seen. But it's just that now your dad wasn't critical, so you guys weren't back in a room.
And then there was so many, all the rooms were filled.
Yeah, it was just full.
Yeah, it was full. And so they immediately then said, oh, yeah, we need to get you back to CT, because again, they have to check for hemorrhaging. They got to make sure that it's not another stroke.
Yeah.
It's not hemorrhaging if it was, because then they'd have to do other things, right? Then it'd be like critical. So let's go. So I head back with them to the CT area. And, you know, my stepmom's with too, and she has Alzheimer's. And so, you know, I'm navigating that as well and helping her to understand what's going on. So it's just the three of us at this point. And so we go back to the CT room and he goes in and we wait outside the door. And then my phone rings. Now, I was prepared for a call from the nurse practitioner because I knew she was going there.
To check on your mom.
To check on my mom.
For an update.
And so I knew at some point she would be calling me. And so I had my Bluetooth headset on, so I'm all set to go because it's a lot easier to navigate what's going on around me when I can hear that and everything else. She calls right while he's in the CT room. And I'm like, OMG. Really? Right,
I mean,
now.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, and I said, hang on, let me get my sister on the phone. So I add her to the call so she can hear everything at the same time. And really good about, you know, both communicating as much as possible so we know what's going on. And she's okay, sister, mom, she's not doing well. She's failing to thrive. Those are words you don't want to hear. And, we've got a couple choices. We've got a few choices. She could either go to the ER again to do more testing.
And for fluids.
For fluids, because she is dehydrated. We could up her level of care that she's currently getting at the assisted living and just kind of monitor things that way. We could think about perhaps hospice because this is looking like possibly end of life. And meanwhile, dad's getting scanned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It was a lot. I mean, it still is a lot when you think about it. They both are okay at this moment, but it still is the point where we're waiting for a phone call or having to make a decision or those kinds of things about care.
I was just like, wow, all of this culminating like in one moment. And it was just, I think the chaos to the ER added to that stress.
Sure.
For sure,
that, you know? Energy there was powerful.
I was just so absorbing all of that chaos into my system. And then thank goodness the hallway was at least quiet where I was standing. But to get that call, and I've got my stepmom next to me, and
well,
I'm trying to comfort her. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. How many
people are faced with the decision? You're at the ER with one parent. And you get a call, someone encouraging you to go to your other parent to take them to an ER.
Right.
You really handled it so beautifully, but that is a dilemma for the ages. You yes. cannot clone yourself in that moment and be with both parents at one time. I mean, somebody could never have predicted that they would both be having crisis at the same moment on the same day in the same universe. I mean, it was just unreal.
Right. It's not like they were in a car accident together.
Right.
Right. So same condition caused said trauma.
Totally different things going on, but both needing time, attention, care, and all of these phone calls equal brokenheartedness because your parents are aging, and it's you can't deny what is really happening when faced with all of their medical stuff. Like, wow, this is what it is like to love an elderly person,
and it's tough, and you're trying to make up, you know, the best decisions that you can. We're doing our play nine rule, which is a card game we love to play. And there's cards that aren't revealed and you don't know how they're going to affect your hand. And so you make the best decision based on the information you have. And then next turn, you may kick yourself because
I should have done something else.
Right?
You make the decision with the information you have at the moment.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of that going on. And so my sister and I are like, well, okay, we're both feeling incredibly overwhelmed. This is not the news we want to hear, but we are not surprised by any means. But we're like, and so we choose then at that moment, knowing that it's not an immediate crisis, like right this second, let's basically talk about it some more tonight as we work through dad's crisis and continuing, and we'll get back to you in the morning and then go from there. She's like, yep, that's a good plan. You know, think about this, think this through. There's a lot to consider here, right? And then also talk to your mom. So then my sister went over to talk to mom because I was in the ER, right? So I'm like, I would have loved to have been there as part of that conversation, but we couldn't at that point.
No, you can't. We
needed to divide
yourself.
And conquer.
Yeah, divide and conquer, yeah, like with kids.
So my sister went and did that, which was amazing and great to have a sibling
so
that
lucky,
could
yeah.
do that, right? Yeah. That it wasn't just me or just her having to handle this. And so she went over and had that hard conversation with mom and then decided to let's just wait and see and get the nursing staff involved and up the care and go from there, take it day by day. And so then dad gets cleared essentially. So they're like, well, the type of stroke that he had can present itself with these repeat little mini things that may or may not be another stroke. And you don't know till you come in. So I'm like,
not the news you want to hear. Yeah. Inconclusive.
I'm like, what? I said, so what you're telling me is these are aftershocks? He's like, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
it's an
like
aftershock. An, okay. So yeah, you had the stroke and now you get these little tremors afterwards.
But you don't know unless you bring them in for testing and they send you home.
Right. So they're like, yeah. So if you see these symptoms again, you're going to bring them in. But if he's had them for 2.5 hours and they start diminishing, watch them, but you're good to go. But if they don't diminish, you got to get them in here because we need them in here within that 3 to 4 hour window. So I'm like, okay, we will do that. It could happen again. It could be done. Nobody knows. But based on the type of stroke he had, these aftershocks are somewhat common. So I'm like, okay.
So he was released.
So he was released
that night, thankfully, and you got to bring him back home.
And the vision cleared up. Dizziness went away by the time we get out of there, you know, many hours later. We were there for probably 5-6 hours, it seems. And we were out. And so, bam, then the next morning comes. And the aides had checked on mom, and she's being pretty unresponsive in the bed. She doesn't want to get up, doesn't want to do anything. And they're suggesting that she goes in, have a paramedics bring her in. And we're like, yep, okay. Hand has been played. So here
decision,
we go.
Yeah, decision yeah. made.
Yeah. So now she's going to the ER again. So
by
here
ambulance.
By ambulance.
That's stressful.
Yep. So trip 4. And so off we go again to the hospital and just run a battery of tests after tests, trying to figure out what is going on. Is it something big? Is it something culminating of many little things, you know, is it medication? What is it?
Is there something that can be done or is this end of life? All those questions.
So much. And all these, you know, what they found was not a whole lot. You know, all the big worries of is there something in her abdomen that's, you know, causing her to have the stomach pain and the not be hungry. There was nothing there. So the big C word was not really present that they could see.
I know, like, at 85, it's a miracle.
Yeah.
I thought for sure this was going to be something big.
Yeah. And they're like, you know, there may be something in the bladder. We'll do a test later. But, boy, there's just nothing really, really conclusive. But we're thinking we're going to shift her medicines a bit. And see if we can get her to eat now, because the big issue is eating. She's not eating and has no desire to eat. You know, I'm full before she even starts.
Before the food ever gets there.
Yeah. So like, is it, you know, dementia? Is it medicine? You know, what is this? And so they start playing with medicines and shifting things around. And next thing I know, she's eating, and she's eating well. You know, like compared,
for her,
yeah, not as much as we would eat,
yeah.
But for her, from taking 2-3 bites, little bites, and saying, "Oh, I'm full, that's enough," to now eating, you know, half the portions or so, or at least a quarter of the portions, and it just kept growing. I was like, "Huh, okay, so this is working," and she's starting to perk up a little bit now as the brain is getting nourishment and all of that, but.
So she currently has been moved. She stayed in the hospital almost a week.
Almost a week, yeah.
And then now she's been moved to like a rehab center.
Yep. So she's in a transitional care unit.
Yeah.
Yep. As they're trying to get her back to where she was physically and everything, right? Because they're asking.
Or where she needs to be to go back to her assisted living place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Social workers asking me, like, what was she able to do for herself before? I think those are the markers they're looking to shoot for as a target to say, okay, yeah, let's get her up so that she can be mobile with her walker on her own and safely and all of that kind of stuff, right? So she is now going through that process. And but there is so much there, right? Because she is clearly having memory issues and they're getting more and more
apparent.
Yeah, they are. They're definitely more apparent. And my dad's having those as well. He can now no longer drive.
Yeah, because of his age and because he did experience a stroke or the averted stroke, they wanted to do driving assessment, which we were happy that someone else is going to tell you this than us.
Right.
And he did not pass every test, so currently cannot drive.
That's another heartbreak, right? Because you don't want to see your parents lose their independence. I don't want to see anybody lose their independence. And driving is a huge thing. I mean, that mobility to be able to say, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to the store, or I'm going to go wherever you want to go on your own, that has now been taken away.
Basically,
right?
It is the two of them are shut-ins.
They are. Now. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a huge change. And there's plenty of us here that want to help, but still emotionally my heart breaks for him because I imagine myself in that place and go, yeah, that would be so hard to give that up. I get that. And gonna have to help them work through that as well because it's another one of those changes. And as our parents age and, you know, fortunately, I guess to live long enough to perhaps start seeing these ailments, I guess is a blessing. But also it comes with struggles. There is a price for that.
We do want the best quality of life. Of course, everyone does for their elderly parent. And it's just hard to see, all of these smaller losses, right, that we don't always talk about, just loss of mobility, loss of memory, loss of independence, you know, they all add up to really, really big changes in a person's experience in the world.
They do. And it's big. It's expected, it's small steps, but I don't think you're ever ready, right?
Nope.
I mean, we've known it was coming, but we didn't know how it was going to present, didn't know how other life circumstances would be playing around it, didn't know that they would both be in this place at the same time, certainly not the same 2-week period where it became a crisis for both of them. Was a huge toll.
And it hasn't played out all the way out. So how many more times might these things line up?
Right.
In perfect alignment that you need to be two places at one time. So we have lots of conversations like, what happens if, when, and you try to prepare, but you can never be 100% prepared.
You can't. And so you hope and you pray that those around you will see you in your brokenness. In my brokenness, my sister's brokenness, our family, I mean, our kids are feeling this as well. This is their grandparents, so they're feeling it. It's not just us, right? It's the whole family is feeling this.
It's their grandparents and it's their parents' parents. So they also feel for you and I.
Right.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my heart breaks for them as they watch this as well. And then, you know, at some point you and I are going to be at this point.
Right. Then this makes it come into full focus.
Right.
For you think about your own golden ages then and what you want to plan for and conversations you should have with your kids.
Right. And preparing them to say, you know what, when you think it's not safe for me to drive, please let's have that conversation.
Or to live alone or
whatever it is, right?
The
all these things, you know. When my filters come off too much, let me know, you know, all these things, please. I'm going to try to prepare myself so that I can listen and accept that and not be stubborn. It's just, it's a hard thing. My heart is breaking. I'm thankful at the same time, that I've got parents at 85, that is a miracle. But I'm also heartbroken too, as I look and go, these are not the parents that I knew, right? The be able to do the things that we used to do together and that they would be aware of and remember and that they could still do. I mourn for that.
Yes.
I grieve for that.
Yes.
You know, my dad could do almost anything. I mean, he was a carpenter all his life, and so he could build most things, and he would just go and do it, right? And he was very much that way. And now it's not safe for him to do those things. And so I grieve for that for him. You know, I don't know that he's grieving it. I think he is at some levels because he will show frustration that he can't do this or that. But on the other hand, I think he's glad to be done with some of those things he used to do.
Yeah, the responsibility.
Right.
And the, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of transition. And my heart goes out to all of us who are dealing with us and our friends and the listeners and everybody in the world who's dealing with these transitions and trying to navigate and figure out and how to learn how to walk left and learn how to walk right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your brokenheartedness with us. It was vulnerable and you're really exposed. I know that the listening audience will greet you with compassion and a sense of knowing, because we all will face these circumstances. It's just not all our turns at one time.
Yeah.
Right? So, tender-hearted listeners, when we turn left, may we be brave and honest. May we let others see our suffering. May we welcome their comfort and love. And when we turn right, may we not avert our eyes. May we see another's suffering, and may we offer our presence and a blessing. And now it's time for Word of the Day with Mike.
Today's word is fitting. It's what I have felt. It's where I have been.
Where you still are.
And still are.
Yeah.
And will be again.
Yes.
The word is lament. It's grief or sorrow expressed in complaints or cries. And further, lamentation, a wailing, a moaning, a weeping. And I think of this as so healing. To me personally, when I lament, it is my ultimate expression of what's going on in my soul, because it is loud. I typically lament in the shower, water streaming on me, and I'm crying, and I'm yelling, and the energy that passes through me when I lament is healing. It is healing. It hurts, but at the end, I breathe, and I breathe, and I breathe.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope that this episode encourages you to explore ways to deepen and strengthen your relationships. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, or listen to us on our website, connectingwithma.com. Remember to hit the like button and tell a friend.